thing in the thing? Like, is it show that, like, it's a real live recording of something happening?
I think it's going to do the thing. And although there is an alarm, there is a little exclamation mark by it. So,
sorry, my life.
There's a not good. Welcome to Game of Nodes, a weekly podcast from independent validator teams. Hello and welcome to Game of Nodes, a weekly podcast from independent validator teams. And I'm here, as always, with Usurper.
As always.
Greatest fan of the Olympics known to man. You've been watching every event, right? What's been the best thing? Of course, you were in Paris to see the Olympics. You were there in the stadium.
Of course. Yes.
Multiple world records you saw in the flesh. Really exciting times. I mean, I wish I could have.
Super exciting. I did see the crowds around the stadiums of the Olympics.
Very exciting.
It's almost the same.
You were there on the days of the men's and women's road races, though, to be fair. So you could have gone and watched the cycling. And I appreciate that I'm the only cycling psychopath on the.
Were we? I don't even know. It must have been
last Saturday, yeah?
Oh, was it? Okay. Yeah.
Yeah, last Saturday, Sunday. Both of them just they had the Butte de Montmartre was the climb before the end, and there were like tens of thousands of people, like all the French with the big flags. Onions around the neck, berets on the head, you know, all of them going, come on, Julien. I am devastated that Julien Alaphilippe did not win, because that would have been just the ticket. Like, can you imagine how mental the French would have been if he had got, like, you know, he had silenced the haters, just peak old school Alaphilippe, rolled over and just smashed the competition. It would have been,
I'll trust you about it.
Yeah, unfortunately, it was just a wash. It was a little bit of a wash. It was kind of exciting. The person who was in the lead had like a 40-second lead, and they had a rear wheel flat with 2 kilometers or 3 kilometers before the line. And they got off the bike and were just screaming, stood in the middle of the road, screaming at the support car, like screaming at them, because they have no time checks. They don't have any radio or anything like they would do in normal racing at the Olympics.
Yeah. Yeah.
So he thought that there was like 20 people behind him that were about to come around that corner, like 10 seconds after him. And so he's just like, every second.
Freaking out.
Yeah, every second you do not give me a new bike, Belgium is going to lose the gold medal.
Yeah.
What the fuck are you doing? And he's literally screaming. They give him the bike, he gets on it, hoons off. The motorbike with the camera gets a bit too close to him. He's like, get the fuck out of my face.
Yeah.
Like, he's just completely rage quitting. He's like, if you do something useful, give me a time check. He's like tapping his watch. And then the Belgian car literally comes up and like shoves the TV motorbike out of the way. And you see the team director like leaning out. He's obviously shouting, like, the time check is like 30 seconds, you mad lad. Stop being mental, you're on global TV. And they pull back. And then when the motorbike comes back, he's just like, whoo, hey. And you're like, okay, cool.
But he won, right?
Yeah. He rolled across like 30, 40 seconds advantage in the end. It was like pretty impressive. The women's was more of a race. The women's was really exciting.
He knew that thing where he just put his arms up and then realized there's somebody just fucking flying past him.
No, he got off the bike at the finish line
and
held up his bike. That's how much time he had, to be fair. So the Americans won the women's. Surprise. Big upset. Big upset. Yeah. It was.
I haven't seen any of it. Zero. We recorded everything before we left. Like, we set up recording and all that stuff, because we knew we were going to miss it. And we usually what we do here, at least in the States, they have like they do prime time, which is they do like a four hour block. And so they basically pick the day's best type of highlights, right? And then they kind of parse them together into a 4 hour. So at least you get 4 hours a day, which is pretty good. And then we try to record as much as we can, like random sports and shit. So we have, I know there's a good 80 hours on the DVR, but we haven't done anything yet. Yeah. So we were there for it. We try to get into a few events. Like there was some, everybody in Paris.
Well, in the gymnastics, apparently. I mean, I saw the Simone Biles one, but I think you guys won another one as well.
They won the team event, right? And then Simone won a couple other golds. And yeah, I mean, honestly,
it's been all, got 100 meters as well.
Yes. Yeah. By like 5,000 or something like that.
Basically,
that
it's by his forehead.
Yeah.
Like, you, yeah. He was just like
literally hair on the chest.
Eagle, yeah. Kind of like, yeah. As he crossed the line.
Yeah. That was so, a cool race. That race I saw. It was like at every, all lanes under 10 seconds, which has never happened before.
So yeah. Like, it was crazy fast.
Yeah. So we were in town. Like, Paris wasn't that bad, actually. Like, just the crowds weren't horrible. Restaurants were busy, but we stayed at a place like it was very close, like, and it wasn't very expensive at all. And transportation was great. The metro was great. Things ran on time. I thought, like, there was a lot of troops in town. So what we heard, we went to Versailles for a day. We talked to somebody, and they said that, like, usually there's like 30,000 federal police in around Paris, and now they had 80,000. And we met police from the U.S. We met from Australia. There was Germany, Austria, so a bunch of other countries just basically sent, you know, whatever forces just to go stand at locations and do whatever. But it was actually pretty orderly, I thought, and like the city itself was gorgeous. Like, they did, I thought they had really cool event locations. So we were,
yeah,
like,
that really seems
they had nice. Like really, really pretty.
Shame about the river, I guess, because that would have been like pretty impressive.
But. Yeah. Yeah, that was maybe a little bit of a stretch.
Did you, because you're a man of culture, did you see, you're also a man who likes heavy guitar music. Did you see the Gojira thing with the opening?
No.
So, you know, the French metal band. You know,
Gojira.
They did something as part of the opening ceremony. They like, it's like this really, it's almost Spinal Tap, right? Because they're like on the sides of this castle, literally like, carabined on in case they fall off, like like playing like melodic death metal basically.
Yeah.
And then this like woman singing like operatically singing in like a little barge like kind of goes past. It's very Spinal Tap because they're like on this massive chateau and this little boat just goes along the front with the woman singing. And like, it's, the thing is, it's quite a big prop. Like, she's only at the front, it's got to be like 15 feet long. But next to a castle, everything looks small.
It was supposed to be 150 feet long.
Yeah, it has a real Stonehenge vibe about it.
Right, like, here, it says 15 really, feet.
Yeah, it is like, you're not as confused as him. Like,
no, 15 meters. 15 meters.
Have you ever been to Stonehenge? The men here are like as tall as two men. I haven't. I just did what was on the piece of paper that you handed to me, Ian. Yeah. It was a bit like that, but it was cool. And it, like, you know, obviously it's kind of cool to see like metal.
Yeah. That's not like a typical opening ceremonies type of vibe, right?
Yeah. Although, to be fair, at London, they had Mike Oldfield do part of the Tubular Bells, didn't he?
I remember that.
Which is pretty fucking cool.
Yeah, I remember that.
But he's a very disturbed. I love Tubular Bells, and I love Tubular Bells 2. And to a lesser extent, I love Tubular Bells 3. And to an even lesser extent, I like Amadorn. And to an even lesser extent, I like Harvest Ridge.
Yeah.
But
that's,
kind
of, that's like a logarithmic. That's not linear though, right? That is just that's a fucking log.
Yeah. It's like the downward log.
Yeah.
But I will say that Mike Oldfield is quite a disturbed man. And if you see an interview with him about any subject that you have skin in the game on, you're like, I'm just going to choose to pretend I never read that. And I'm going to continue to enjoy your music. I mean, to be fair, he literally just joined a cult for like five. He joined a laughing cult, I think, for like 5 years in the 90s and married the daughter of the cult leader. So like,
he says it all. Yeah.
He's had ups and downs, but yeah, there's definitely one of those like if you just don't look up what Mike Oldfield's doing,
just enjoy the music.
Yeah, or like what he thinks about anything, because you'll probably just be like,
yeah, exactly. So what else? Yeah, Paris was good. We didn't make it. So back to the events. So like they did a pretty good job in terms of resale, and everything was kind of running through the Olympic sites and all that kind of stuff for resale. So, and they would open up tickets every day. We kept looking. So there was really not like, we wanted to go to an event, but like swimming events that we had some interest in some swimming events, even for like a single, you know, they would kind of break them up into like 4 hour buckets. So they probably do a morning session, the afternoon session, like an evening session, something like that. And for four seats, not even together, like two and two, at a decent swimming event, like some heats that of like races you would want to see, for a 4 hour block would be probably 4,000 euros, which is
expensive,
which is enough for you. Like, well, do we have to, like, it would be better to just like, it would be a cool event, but $4,000. And so we looked at everything from like, we were looking at table tennis to handball, which I go see. Like they're all like in that, like, even for table tennis would be fun. Like, I'm not saying it wouldn't be, it'd be like, it was like 2 hours for $1,000. Like, I don't love it that much.
It's free all along.
I know. Yeah.
I know. So, and you guys want it as well. You could have literally,
I'm sure they would have found a way to charge for it. I don't know. It had to be something, but, and we weren't,
well, I mean, you probably, you know, there'll be people selling your water and stuff. Cause
oh yeah, yeah,
a hot day, but yeah. You know.
I didn't even know. I didn't see anything related to the routes of that or anything else, but
that was Central Paris.
No, it was. Oh, damn, that's too bad. Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of stuff closed. I thought they had really cool locations of different types of events. We were in Versailles for a day, and they do some horse riding thing right there on the grounds. Like, it was gorgeous, like a beautiful spot. So that, I think Paris, I think France really showed off, I think, the country pretty well, at least from what I saw. But yeah, we had some opportunities to go, and we just kind of, and we weren't there for that for anyway. We were doing other types of things. And so if it worked out, it worked out, but it didn't work out. Plus they'll be in LA in 4 years. So like, if we really want to go be a little bit more planful, we could do that in LA.
Yeah. To be fair, that's true. It'll be
twice as expensive, I'm sure.
Yeah, I mean, you have to obviously get a visa to go from the Union States of America to the Pacific States of America for the...
It's painful, yeah. The train ride literally would be 4 days.
Yeah.
So that was good. Yeah, I don't know. We did a lot in Paris. Like, we stayed there a while. It was cool. Saw you in London. That was fun. Kids didn't like London that much.
I think London's one of those things that, like...
I could be older. Or
but also like a lot of the cool shit that I always used to think was cool about London was stuff you kind of need to live really close or in, or just really just in the little bit around to like really appreciate. But like, honestly, even then, I guess a lot of the shit that I cared about when I was younger, like the music scene and the art scene and whatever, has like, as far as I can tell, like I'm not an authority on it because I don't live around there anymore. Like, it became very atomized because it was so expensive. Like, even gig venues, just like booking a London show.
Yeah.
Like, it used to be like you book something in Camden, like no big deal. Like, you know, when I was a kid, when I was like 12, 13 and onwards, just sneak into over 18 shows in Camden all the time. Like, and that's how you saw bands that were like small enough to tour, like big enough to tour, but still small.
Sure.
And then it was like, oh, okay, well, those venues are closed. So now it will be like the back of a video game bar in like Dalston or something, or there'll be something just off Brick Lane, maybe like a kind of shitty back room, shitty sound system. Fine, that's cool. It's not a dedicated venue anymore with 100 cap, but fuck it. Like, it does the job. And then like, it just kept going like further out, you know? That's just my impression. Like, I know there is still stuff there and there are still venues still going. So I'm being a little bit unfair, but you know, it's happened a lot of places, I guess. Like, so it's not just London, but like, yeah, I don't know. I feel like when I go there now, and I'm there a lot with work and other things, like a lot of, just like, it's a very different place. I can't even describe it anything like that, any other than that. Like, I would totally take the wee man to go to like a bunch of museums and stuff, because there's loads of cool stuff like
there
that. There's loads of like cool art galleries and whatnot. But like, things to just do? No, I don't know. I guess I'm just showing the kind of things that I want to do, really. That like it feels like there's less of that around than there used to be. And I don't know. Maybe I've just got old. I don't know.
In the museums, I mean, museum-wise, there's a ton, right? And so some of that they're age-appropriate for, some of that they're not. And then outside of that, like, what else? I mean, we went to Westminster and we did, you know, you do all that kind of shit, right? And the history of that's pretty cool. And even Tower of London was fun. Like, we had a good half day there, just because our kids don't see anything at that age and with that history and the stories that go along with those types of things. So that was fun. But after that, they're like, all right, let's get out of here.
Yeah.
Like, all right, kind of got it. So, and then Paris, they loved. I mean, they don't know. Just maybe the Olympics helped with that, but there's, you know, just there's some cool shit to do there. And then Amsterdam, we went to Amsterdam after that, and I think they
would you get to Amsterdam?
We honestly, they would. City. They would move there in a second. Like they just like they're like this. Like they just, I think they just loved the vibe, and it was also cooler. Paris and London were both pretty hot when we were there, and especially Paris. And then actually not London. I'm sorry, Paris was hot. Not London wasn't bad. It wasn't. But it cooled off and like I don't know, just slowed down a little bit. We had great meals. We saw a ton of cool shit.
You get some of that famous apple pie from that place up on the canal.
Yes, we did. A few different places, actually. Some places I used to go to, a couple of restaurants we used to go to, like I used to go to like 20 years ago, we went back to, which was, one was great, and the other one was shit. We did a boat tour, just kind of hung out, go see these things.
The food is really interesting in Amsterdam, isn't it? Because like, there's a lot of places that are just ridiculously above their weight. And they're just tucked into every, it feels like more than other cities of that size, I've just gambled on, here's a restaurant that's charging like 13 euros rather than euros or whatever, like a handful of euros more.
Yeah.
And like when I've been obviously with other half and we've just sat down somewhere and the food has been really, really, really impressive.
Agreed.
I've just been like, whoa, okay. That was completely not expected. Whereas there's definitely like, I don't mean to be a shit about it, but like I wouldn't expect that if I was in Brussels, a city I love, but the food culture isn't as good. It's the beer culture is great though, but that's another thing. Like we just sat down literally on the street at a little wire table once.
Yeah.
Like this is the one that really sticks in my head. And it was just a handwritten board, like a little Italian place. And it was just like, they literally like, as it turned out, they were literally rolling the fucking pasta.
Sure.
Like it was unbelievable. It was like 12, I think it was literally 12 fucking euros. Like,
yeah.
I mean, it was just like it wasn't super fancy food, but it was really good.
I think that sums it up. Like we had great meals at some places that I thought were incredibly unique and different menus than anywhere else. Right. Like things that that were quite good. In Paris, funny enough, we went to a couple great places in Paris, and everything else that we went to kind of seemed the same. Like we went, even based off of good reviews on the Fork, and we're trying to mix up obviously different types of cuisines and all these types of things. And there's a cafe in every corner. And at some points we got, I think it was not, we weren't even like in touristy areas. Like we just were trying to find different types of things, and it was a little bit harder. Which is weird, but we also went to a couple of places that were just awesome, like, you know, some great places. Ryan, carnivore, we went to that place. We were actually there. There's a restaurant like Carnivore or something. I forget what the hell it's called. That they have like, I think, which is weird because usually we try to pick places that don't have multiple locations. But they do. They have like, I think 4 or 5, like just within central and like within the canals. And we were there Monday night, actually. Which we had a great meal there. So that was one of those examples of just like we kind of ran into that and, you know, look good and blah, blah, blah. I mean, Amsterdam, it's a totally livable city.
Another really expensive place though.
Not as bad as
when the market's up, it's a livable city.
Yeah. But yeah. I mean, not as bad as, actually I think we probably spent less there on meals than we did anywhere else. Probably, maybe. I don't know. It was tough. And then also, I mean, it's, you know, it's there's less to do there, I guess, would be the thing. Plus, it's a little bit older city. Like, our kids are a little bit young. We didn't go, like, we didn't walk down red light or we didn't go to, you know, XYZ. So, which you can have a little bit more fun there. So, anyway, it was good. So, and then we had we've been so fucking unlucky on
connections. I've forgotten you going to Amsterdam. Like, I would have told you where the video game arcade place was that we went with Artifact. It was like one of the Aptos evening events.
Oh, yeah.
The side event was at this video game bar just across the water in this like kind of cool up and coming neighborhood. You get to, if you've got a Metro Pass, the ferry is free.
Oh, North Amsterdam.
Yeah. Across, yeah. Across, so,
Yeah,
just like kind of cool. It's like just a cool extra thing, like to throw into the mix for the kids as well. It's like, hey, we're gonna get on this like weird barge thing.
Yeah, that
impressed me anyway as an adult. So I was like, this must therefore logically impress a kid. But I obviously don't know that was a guaranteed thing.
We were on that side. We went up to Jean Chouan, which was like we're some windmills and like just stuff to go do, just get out of the city for a day, which we try to do in every like location, is try to get, you know, do like a little bit of a day trip. That was good. I honestly, trains were awesome. Fucking, I love like that travel being an American is so fucking annoying. Because we get, and I don't know what's going on with us and connections back. Every fucking flight connection we've had, I think this year has been blown. So we flew out of Amsterdam yesterday morning, 8.5 hours. It was late. It was 3 hours late. Then an 8.5 hour flight. We landed in Philadelphia, fucking hauling ass, got through customs really fast, get to the gate. They cancel our flight here like as soon as we walk up to the gate. So it's like 5 o'clock. They book us on a 3 o'clock flight today, a day later. It was bad storms and everything else. So I ran in the fucking car and I drove 5 hours after that. So we walked in at like 11. So it was 8.5 hour flight, and then I drove for 5 hours, like fucking flying across the state.
I've been to Philadelphia.
I need that.
Philadelphia precisely once, also to transfer for an internal American flight.
Brutal.
And I was it was like 1 o'clock in the morning, and the signage is really bad in that airport, in my opinion. And there was like a cop sitting on a chair, half asleep, with like the paper in his lap, and I just walked past him because I was trying to find anywhere fucking open to eat some food because I'd just been across the Atlantic, so hungry, and my arms are tired too. But no, it's one of those where it's like a 6 hour. It's that weird gap between like being like a 5 hour flight and like an 8 hour flight. They only give you like one meal. It was like in that weird little middle ground. And I was just like sticking my head around the corner and I was like, oh, there's nothing there. So I turned around to come back and this guy wakes up kind of thing. He's like, whoa, what are you doing? I was like, well, I literally just walked past you. He's like, yeah, I saw that. And I was like, okay, cool. no worries. I'll just be going my way then. And he's like, well, no, you can't do that. I'm like, and why can't I do that? And he's like, well, you're now not in the checked in area of the airport. And I was like, what? Where's security? Like where's
that line?
Gates and whatever. And he was like, I am. And I was like, but there's no sign. There's no. And he was just like, what are you supposed to ask me or whatever? I was like, are you fucking kidding me? And so then I had to, I was like, well, what are we going to do here? And he was like, well, you need to go back to whatever airline you're flying with and recheck it.
You're like, son of a bitch.
I was like, all my shit's in transit. He's like, I don't worry about that. You just got to go through all the fucking...
Yeah, so I got through security.
Yeah. And so I had to go back, find the airline desk or the transfer, explain what had happened. And they were just like, Well, you're going to have to show your passport and all that junk again. I was just like, because they're like, have you got any bags? I'm like, yeah, they're literally in transit. I walked past your man over there and now... because it was like early hours in the morning, there was only like one security line, and it was just like I literally burnt like 3.5 hours of fucking
flying around there.
Finally got back to the other side, still no fucking food. It was I was like, beautiful city, Philadelphia, beautiful city, would definitely come back. Thank you to your airport. It was quite funny though. But so anyway, in conclusion, Europe, thumbs up from Ryan.
Yeah, we had a good time. I thought kids had a good time. Yeah, we had it's the longest we've ever been, which is, you know, that's the longest we've ever been together on the road in that type of situation. And, they did pretty well. So, kids were exhausted. It's all good. They learned some shit.
Happy days. You ready to get back to the degeneracy?
Yeah. And I'm looking at the fucking charts and what happened. What'd you guys do?
Yeah, I noticed you came back and then there was like a crash. It has been,
no,
has been noticed. Although to be fair, you would have been on the plane.
I was on the road when it happened.
I think you might have been on the plane when everything went to doodly doodly.
Yeah, what happened?
Yeah, what did happen? That is a good question. Well, I guess we didn't need to earn money anyway, so that's probably fine.
pretty brutal.
Yeah, it's funny because so I was at a conference last week. Shout out Blockstart in Scotland, which is I think one of the first crypto conferences has been in Scotland. It was like a relatively small thing. It's just kind of up the road. Mm. So I figured go to Glasgow.
Yeah,
better get a pizza crunch.
A what?
Sink some beers. It's when you deep fry it, you batter and deep fry a pizza.
Oh, okay.
Pizza crunch. In the end, I bottled the pizza crunch. I literally stood there in the chippy and I was like, I don't have it in me right now. I can't. So I just said, oh yeah, can I have a packet of chips, please? Have a bad haggis, please, and a packet of chips. To be fair, bad haggis was smashing, so nay regrets. But I bottled it on the pizza crunch. I just couldn't face it at that point. I'd had a few beers, and I was like, no, I just don't want to wake up with a stomachache.
That sounds awful. It literally sounds awful.
It's so delicious. The problem is, it is so delicious, but you pay for it. You pay for every bite. you feel the hangover not from the beer, but from the pizza. The next day, it's just so calorie rich. Like you can take, because it's like it's battered and fried, like, and none of it's calories that are actually helping your body like power itself. You know,
is a pizza cooked first and then it's battered and fried, or it's raw and then they just put batter on it and they dump
straight
it
out the freezer, pretty much.
Oh, it's like a frozen thing.
Yeah. I don't know. Well, to be fair, some places probably make you like a pizza and then they batter and fry it, but like. The kind of 4 pound pizza crunch that I've had in the past has been very much like a frozen margarita type level. You know, it's somewhat cardboard like pizza to begin with, but a lot of enthusiasm, you know, a lot of enthusiasm, not a lot of attainment in terms of quality. But very tasty, in the right situation. So yeah, I went to this conference, and there was one funny thing, right? I think I sent on the group chat that the networking event on the first night was at a golf range, like a driving range.
Okay. Oh yeah, you said.
And I have not, other than mini golf, crazy golf, I've not swung any kind of golf club since I lived by the sea and occasionally did like pitch and putt, right?
Uh-huh.
It's not a sport I understand. And it turns out that at an event which was like quite small and kind of some crypto degens and some TradFi people, it was kind of like a bit of a weird crowd, actually. There were a surprising number of keen golfers. And not my sport. Not my sport.
Did you hit?
Oh, yeah, I hit every ball.
Oh, okay. All right.
But like, I'm a cyclist. I have no upper body strength. I couldn't get it. I couldn't get it past the second hole.
Was it like an outdoor driving range? Was it like one of those like where they put fences up on the side and they put like targets out and it's all electronic and all that kind of shit?
Yeah,
was it like
a
Top Golf type of thing?
Yeah, it was literally a Top Golf.
Oh, it was Top Golf. Okay. All right. Yeah. All right. So you're drinking, you're hanging out. Somebody falls into the fucking basket over the edge, like that type of thing, right? Like,
yeah, they were like, this happens literally every week. Please do not step on the outside.
Like, I've seen people fall into that thing too. Yeah,
it is mad. I was like, but how uncoordinated would you have to be to fall off this 2-story building?
I don't know. People say they take a swing and then they take one extra step and then they're drinking too much. Next thing you know, their ass into that thing.
You just stand roughly still and rotate your upper body, right?
It's pretty funny though.
Yeah, I mean it would have been funny to see it. It's I just funny. Don't understand how you can be that mal coordinated even when you're drinking.
I don't know.
Was it you?
You were? No, it wasn't me.
I did have one funny moment though, which is I realized that I lack the strength to hit it very far, but because it's Top Golf, the first mode is just one where if you get them in one of the nets, that like that scores you more points, right? It's just about consistency. And I realized that the hardest I could hit it was about the range of the second or third net, right? Okay. And I realized there was a pin beyond it further away that I couldn't reach, but I could just aim for the one that I couldn't reach and smack it, like just absolutely twat it with all my strength, and chances are it would land in the one in front. And so I got 5 in a row into that one. and scored like a massively high score, or like a quite high score, right? And then the net result of that was somebody that I actually already knew came past and was like, "You didn't say you were good at golf." And I was like,
mm-hmm.
I've briefly worked out an algorithm for gaming the system. I'm not good at golf. And then the people on my net, some of whom were serious golfers, they were like, So then we did a different mode. I did exactly the same thing a second time.
Yeah.
And then the third time they were like, "We're going to change it to the actual golf simulator where you have to aim at a specific thing and like drive, and you're not even aiming for a pin necessarily. It gives you a number of yards you're supposed to estimate and hit." And then I just got completely dominated, obviously, but it was quite funny. It was quite funny that like I managed to work out a way of just like, because I was just like having a laugh, but like I kind of got myself in a little bit of hot. Was like, "No, now we're going to play serious golf." And it was just like me, 0, 0, 0, 0, 0. Because I was still hitting it, but I was like, only hitting it like 50 yards. So they were just like.
So what was your takeaway from this conference?
My takeaway was that crypto is in a weird place and it might be in trouble. That was my takeaway. Because I mean, it was a small conference. It was the first conference, and it was, to be fair, pretty well organized. And shout out to the organizers; they did a good job. Actually, like very well organized for what I think was a first conference. But it was more like the tone and tenor of it was very like So like, I mean, my rule of thumb is like, I remember like rocking up in Lisbon in 21. Where when I rocked up, it was the last day of the Solana party there, and then Cosmoverse was after, right? And the energy and enthusiasm and interest from that point, like 10 and 21, to where we are now, the couple of crypto things I've been to this in the last sort of 12 months, like it's just not comparable. The people who seem the most excited are essentially TradFi people who have realized that they are now in a position where regulators are giving them an avenue to play in the casino.
Agreed. Yeah.
And they can now play in the casino. But those use cases, if you're not into like either quite boring stablecoin stuff, and I'm not, and I think it's a bad solution for a problem. And if you're not into like a really particular type of DeFi, then those aren't very interesting to you if you got into crypto a few years ago, because whatever reason you got into crypto, like maybe you're just like an internet libertarian, maybe you can be one of many different cohorts of people. You can be like an OG cypherpunk or like more of a cypherpunk leaning type person. You can be any of these different personas you see a lot of in the space. Very few of those that were driving, I think, the energy level a few years ago are excited by the developments that are now driving it now. Like where the money is right now is VCs, institutions, stablecoins, KYC. And it's a lot of it is just, it's not fun. It doesn't feel exciting. That's just my personal opinion, right? Like I work on digital cash and I think it's a very important use case. It's very interesting, literally academically interesting. But I'm not excited about digital cash. I think it's a necessary thing. Like it's not, and I think like what I kind of work on from a research perspective is, in my opinion anyway, more exciting than a lot of the stuff that comes out of these sorts of sessions. And I'm like, I work on something very dry. So if I think the thing I literally am interested in, which I do not consider to be exciting, is more exciting than a given subject, then dude, like, I mean, like, and you know, that's natural, I guess. Like, you know, like in 2021, 2020, a little bit before, you know, it was still like, even NFTs were like, still like, whoa, fucking NFTs. Wow.
Sure.
You know, whatever. Yeah. Like, you know, it's partly a sign of like maturity or whatever that conversation has moved on so far, but it's not moved on to another actual use case that's interesting and novel.
Yeah.
Because NFTs are at least kind of novel in their own way. And I think that's the thing that kind of, I wouldn't say made me sad, but like, it was a thing I was reflecting on as well, because I was talking to somebody that was also at SmartCon. And I was like, oh, yeah, we were there as well. I was there with some buddies and blah, blah, blah. And I was thinking that actually, like, that energy, like, I couldn't really put my finger on why SmartCon bummed me out a little bit as well. And I think partly it was just I was sleep deprived because I just had a small child. But I think it was also like at the events there, there was a lot of that same energy where.
Oh, yeah. There's definitely a lot of
it. Yeah. Where the energy and the money in the room was from quite boring use cases.
Yeah.
Which weren't novel in any way. And you just, it's just very hard to get excited about those. I don't think those are the reasons that any of us got into this space or found it interesting in the first place. And that's not me being negative. I think that's just like it's just a fact. Like, those may be useful use cases, and they may be the use cases, you know, that all of our companies are going to use to make money in 2 years' time, 3 years' time, 4 years' time, whatever. But I find it hard. That's the kind of shit where you're like, yeah, this is interesting. This is a way of making money. Like, that's the interest here. If you want me to work in it and take an interest in it, then here's the rate card. Like, it's not an exciting thing.
Yeah.
You know, and there was quite a lot of stuff like that.
I agree with you. It's tough to get excited about something when like the main keynote speaker is like from JP Morgan Chase, right? Like, it's difficult to, like, I was trying to get away from this shit, and now, right? And now we're listening to use cases about how these organizations are not going to use our services or those types of distributed systems to do anything. They're going to take advantage of the technology and maybe recreate something that's obviously going to benefit them, right? To that point. I think it probably is a necessary step to move this forward, because I think without that legitimacy and without some legitimacy is a tough word, without that component and without some of that validation, I think the rest of this is starting to wind up, right? Like, there's only so many Kujira events that can happen, or Terra 3s and all this type of shit. People just fucking, why am I going to do this? Like, burn me three times, right? And so I think some of that might be a necessary piece to maybe spawn the next set of projects that might have better timing, even though what they're delivering might not be necessarily novel or new. And, you know, maybe these cases are already here. Are they in the room with you? Maybe the use cases are already here.
Are these DAOs in the room with you right now?
Maybe they're already here. They're just, the timing was incorrect and the delivery was obviously way incorrect on some of these. And maybe some of that just requires, maybe, I don't know. Who knows? But I don't think I agree with you. Like, it's boring and it is concerning. I also think it's time for some wins. And I do think that some of those use cases driven by even organizations that I would not say would be the best representation of the future of what's trying to be built. It might create some wins, and maybe that's a good outcome.
I will say a good step. One of the interesting conversations I had, because I'm fucking boring as shit, like, some of the most interesting conversations I had were with lawyers, but. That's no reflection on the lawyers themselves, who are very lovely, interesting people. But
look, I have a text question for you. Yeah.
But they, you know, they have a dry subject area. Like, I get that what I do is also a dry subject area. So no disrespect to lawyers. Anyway, there were some academics working on a DPIN. I guess you must know what DPIN is, right? This was a new acronym to me.
So crazy exciting.
Yeah. Decentralized physical infrastructure. And they were talking about cell phone networks, right? So Helium, right? Mm-hmm. But specifically, like, they were looking at leveraging some of the things that have been built in that space for solar capacity planning. Now, I've heard this argument a few times. I've heard it at a smaller conference in the UK before. I've heard it here too. I've heard it like in a very degen, oh, let's trade energy credits, let's leverage against them, blah, blah, blah. Yeah. This was a quite sober Swedish academic saying, look, we need this to be stable, non-speculative, based on a fiat currency, but just leveraging infrastructure in order to deliver a market for buying and trading these credits. That's basically what we're going to do. We worked out all of the market dynamics we need to affect. We have all these ideas about XYZ, and we've realized if we want to deliver in the next 4 years, we just need to use something existing, so we're going to use Helium.
Really? Are they?
Yeah. And I was talking to them about it, and I was like, well, it kind of sounds like you guys need like a stable coin, a stable asset and stuff. And they were like, oh, well, you know, because of this, I didn't fully understand this because I'm not.
They trade a few different tokens. I don't think any of those are stable though.
There's something to do with the way you can, if you are a holder, you can issue and burn something in such a way that you can create like an artificial peg. I didn't really quite follow this argument, but there's something that they're just like, look, it's not, what we're planning to do here is going to be substantially less volatile than almost any other crypto asset we could use.
Cool.
And although bag holders will benefit, like if this ever became very, very successful, and the price would accumulate over time, which would eventually cause us problems from an economic perspective. If the token became too valuable,
right?
We would have to rebuild and move. Yeah. Those are all givens. Yeah. But on a 3-year time scale, that's probably not going to be an issue. And on a 3-year time scale, it's probably stable enough for our needs right now, given the volume we're going to have. That I can respect, because, you know, I sort of made my standard, you know, like, well, okay, but I'm a bit concerned about this, I'm a bit concerned about that. And they're like, yeah, fair enough. Those are all correct, but they're all correct from a kind of platonic correctness standpoint. And, you know, we don't even know if this has legs. I mean, we know, we can point you to a chart and say capacity is mismanaged here. Yeah. And it would be good to expose the market to do that. We have a way of potentially doing that. Or, you know, it might be that a government just steps in, builds an online platform, and just allows it to be traded via there. Great. That solves the problem. Fine. You know, our interest is more in solving the problem. This is not going to make us rich, right?
Yeah.
This will make helium bag holders gain a bit of money. We run a helium validator. It potentially would make us money. It's probably not going to make us rich, right? Mm-hmm. If the government stepped in and did it a different way, we're not going to be upset as long as the solution works, right? So anyway, those guys were pretty interesting. And like, I just don't know enough about how the helium stuff thrashes out to really fully, to like pose them any interesting technical questions, I suppose, about the operations of it all. But it kind of seemed like they had it all in hand. And that was actually an interesting use case, albeit a kind of in its own way quite boring one. But I was like, again, the thing that appealed to me about it as well is I was like, nobody's going to become like a zillionaire for doing this, which makes me think that it actually is real. Whereas like, I mean, not naming any names, but like carbon credits, when people fucking talk about carbon credits all the time, you're just like, people make a shitload of money off carbon credits, which is how you can tell they're kind of a scam.
Yeah.
It was true.
It's true.
Like, you know, hey,
what's happening?
And behold, the young father in his natural habitat.
Unwashed. That's right.
Gaze at the bags under the eyes.
Droopy eyes and dirty shirt.
Yeah. Dirty shirt, my hair, like you'd see how bad my hair is. Headphones on, pressing it all in.
Yeah.
After he has completed the podcast, he will return to his lair to slumber and feed. How you doing, man?
Yeah, pretty much.
Nobody's screaming now. They will scream
good.
Soon.
Yeah. I'm tired. We set up our friend set up a meal train for us.
Oh yeah, nice.
And so one of the people that made us something, and I don't even know what it is yet because I haven't looked. Other than cupcakes, I had one of the cupcakes. They just took off. So sorry I'm late.
That's nice. A little meal train going on.
That's awesome.
Yeah, I had never heard of this thing, but I'm stoked about it.
It's kind of, I thought it was a Yinzer thing, actually, but I think it shows up everywhere.
That might make sense.
Yeah.
Since my wife is a Yinzer.
Yeah.
And so,
but if your friends are not, I don't know. Who knows? Unless I doubt you guys petition for a meal train. It just shows up.
No.
And we're already getting comments. We're already getting comments. What the heck is a meal train? I didn't want to ask. I felt embarrassed asking about a thing that I fully have never heard of before, but thank you, James.
Also,
well, James is also a Yinzer, so
yeah, you have to be older though. But, I think you have to be older.
So a Yinzer boomer?
I mean, you're the one getting a meal train out of us too. So just watch your watch your terms there, buddy. A meal train typically is when usually it happens for both good reasons and also sometimes bad reasons. But if a family's going through something where you just might not have the time, it could be a baby or it could be, again, there's other reasons why you might not like you might be pressing on something else, like maybe somebody passes away or maybe, you know, it's an illness or something else, that friends and family will schedule something to say, hey, over the next 2 weeks, you know, every day, which is, I think, too much, but usually every day or every other day, somebody volunteers to say, I'm going to make them a meal and I'll bring it to them. So usually like somebody drops it off at, you know, 2 or 3 o'clock or something like that. And then, which is really nice. And then sometimes what ends up happening is like you either eat them or they start piling up and now you feel guilty because you have 75 pounds of food that people are making for you. And you guys are only eating a little bit because they always usually make too much, right? They show up with like enough to feed like an army and there's only two of you, right? Like that type of shit happens. But that's what a meal.
Okay, we got a lasagna on like a full on like a 16-inch tray. Like, so we're like, oh god!
And then somebody's
like 20 meals out right, of it.
Right, like a week's worth of food.
Then the next day, somebody else shows up with another one. You're like, whoa! Like, just put a pause on this thing. Yeah,
I know. Well, yeah. So this is literally the third lasagna we've received.
Yeah.
So
which is really nice. It's just like usually like they coordinate. Like you try not to overlap. You're like, I'm going to do this. I'm going to do that. But usually what we've never had one. We've done a bunch of them for different people and we try to take it easy. Some people just bring groceries. Like sometimes you just like bring, you know, fresh fruits and vegetables and stuff like that. And anyway, that's a meal train.
Just be like, you're totally exhausted. Here's an assemble your own meal. Figure it out. See ya.
Something, or just like snacks, like something where it doesn't have to be like a full, it doesn't have to be a fucking tray of lasagna every time is what I'm saying. Like it could be anything. Right. But, It could be just a case of beer. I think, like, I brought a case of beer once. Everybody's like, that's tacky. I'm like, no, it's not.
No, it's not.
Maybe it's not for everybody in the house, but you got to look at the big picture. Like, you know, you add these things up. They're just not drinking beer.
I think I had a little bit of that whiskey in the first 6 weeks. But, like, I mean, I think it was like, I think I was about to have a nap in the middle of the day and the baby finally gone down. And I didn't know if it was day or night particularly. And I was just like, ah, a quiet moment.
Yeah.
This looks like a great bottle of whiskey. This seems like a really sensible thing to do when you're totally exhausted, is drink a bit of whiskey while you're in charge of a child. Just a wee dram. Although just it wasn't a
little
scotch,
bit. It's okay. Just like a little bit. Yeah, a little grammar at the end of the day. You know,
it's like the, you know, the Lionel Hutz thing. It's like, what's that? Oh dear, very good.
So things are good at the house?
Yeah, right now we have a fence being built because before there was no way of like keeping the dogs in. So they're actively...
They're building out there right now?
Yes, actively putting up the final gate now. The swinging gate.
Oh, right.
Great.
Nice.
Swings so, inward, yeah. I assume?
Inwards, yeah. So we're on a flag lot, and so we actually share a driveway with our, like, in front of our house neighbor people. And so we have it swinging in, and they're not super stoked about it because they use part of our, like, secondary off area in order to, like, back out.
Oh, so you're...
But the gate's not going to be closed all the time. It's just that, like, if we want, you know, to be totally locked down to let the dogs run around, we can.
Nice.
Yeah. That's, what are those books behind you? It looks like... We look like we're in the Nerd Palace now in the new place.
Yes, now I can finally actually set up everything I've got. So this shelf is role playing games. This is some of my role playing stuff.
Is that D&D? Are those D&D books?
Bottom two shelves are D&D.
Yeah, books. I know that. I know that label.
Yeah, third shelf is Esterin. Fourth is L5R, which is like feudal Japan. And then other D&D related role playing related stuff, and then. Over here is novels, graphic novels, comics.
Pikachu.
Python books.
Pikachu.
All sorts of nonsense.
You said Pikachu.
You said Pikachu.
You did.
fucking branded it up.
Yeah. So, and then in the center is cigars, smoking tobacco, things like that.
You should put a fridge in there.
You know, I thought about putting a fridge in here. We actually have one that's just in the garage doing nothing. It's a, like, 36... size wine bottle
dual zone
fridge, uh-huh. Whatever. Yeah, dual zone. Thank you. That's what I was looking for. Haven't decided if it's actually coming in yet.
Okay.
But it'd be over here. You would never see it.
All right.
My other half learned how to make cheese once. And for hard cheeses, you need like essentially a wine bottle fridge because that's the right temperature to cure cheese. Like if you don't have a cheese cave. And so we had, there was a period of time we just had like underneath the dining table, there was like a wine bottle fridge. And people would be like, oh, getting into wine, are you? And it was like, open the door. And then obviously it's like still like, you know, a curing cheese. They're like, open up. Jesus Christ, what's in there?
What are you doing in here?
And then, yeah, that last, it turns out it's really actually quite hard to make cheese. It's a good thing to pay somebody else to do. So eventually that didn't leave the house. I was enthusiastic about it when hard cheese was being made because it, you know, I'm getting all the benefit for none of the work, but there, that was, my lack of hard.
One of the weird things about a university nearby is like world renowned for their cheese. They have some sort of cheese program or something. And so you can get really great cheeses in a can for pretty cheap. That's just like divine. So I have no impetus to make cheese.
They have a cheese course. That is, yeah, don't tell my other half that.
no impetus to make cheese.
Yeah, you can just go do a whole degree in cheese making. That would be 100% possible.
When I was asking before about how things are going, I was kind of not asking about the fence. I was really asking about the new human that lives in your house. How's that part of your life changing? How's that going?
Oh, he's great. He's really funny. So he pops out, right?
yeah.
And the first thing he does is he makes one of the sounds that my dogs make. And so he makes this sound, and the midwives and the doula, they immediately like kind of like go straight a little bit, like, what the hell sound was that? I don't recognize that. And they gave each other weird looks, and they're like, that was a weird vocalization. And we're like, that's our husky. That was our husky noise. Like that's the noise that my husky makes to like tell everyone to wake up. It was just spot on.
So
everything from there,
that's funny.
It's been hilarious.
How's he sleeping?
So his schedule is completely inverted right now. So right now he's totally out. He sleeps all day long. It's great, kind of. And then at around 11 p.m., he's up until like 7 a.m.
Is he eating every couple hours?
He is eating every couple hours. Yeah. So he'll wake up every couple hours, eat, and then go right back to sleep.
Yeah.
Until like 11 p.m., in which case he's just up. So what really? We've been doing is, yeah. So what we've been doing is I'm basically like the sacrificial lamb. So I'll stay up while he's up so that Cassie can just kind of sleep as much as she can.
Sure.
Now she does have to get up at some point to like
feed.
To feed. Yeah. Yeah. But other than that, I just kind of stay up and watch a lot of TV. I put more TV in over the last 2 weeks than I think I have over the last like 5 years.
So what's he doing when he's awake? He's just like, looking around, just
hanging around,
not like freaking out or anything else. He's just like, hey, what's up?
Nope. Yeah. Oh. Pretty much just looking right up at me. Yep. For like 8 hours. It's wild.
I feel like I maybe paid a bit less attention at that point. I was like, and you're chill, so I'm gonna pop you in the Moses basket next to me and I'm gonna just do my shit.
He's chill until you put him down, and then like, and then he goes bloody murder. Yeah,
that's crazy. Yeah. That's bad luck. I have a picture of really when I had my phone stolen in Barcelona when we were at SmartCon. I was really upset because I thought I'd lost this photo, but it turned out it's fine. I'd sent it to a friend and then they sent it back to me. But it was like, it's basically, in fact, it was actually literally behind me here where there's that stack of two Marshall heads or whatever. The cradle was just in front of it. And I was just like playing and he's just like, huh? What's going on? Are we doing an activity together? And it's like, yeah, kind of little guy. That's cool.
That's awesome. That's great. No, he's having none of it. If you put him down, he's immediately like, I'm out. Like, pick me back up. This is nonsense. Do better.
They do. I mean, they're also just like, until they're 12 weeks old, they're just like, they should still be cooking in the oven. So it's not really surprising, is it?
No.
Like, they're just so, they're so, whatever, man. Because you look back, even like at this point, I don't know about where Serp is, but like, even at like 18 months, and you're just like, you see a picture of them as a baby and you're like, dude, what? Like this now very heavy human that's given me chronic back pain. was that tiny? What the fuck? Like, you see a picture of them like in the palm of your hand and you're like, that doesn't add up.
Yep.
Yeah, well, so yes, I can kind of relate already. So he lost 14% of his body weight in the first like 3 days.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you're supposed to.
Which is pretty normal, but 14% is considered like quite a bit less. Like normally 10% is pretty okay.
Right.
14%, they're kind of like,
keep an eye on it.
And now he's, yeah, and now he's gaining 2 ounces a day, which is double normal, I guess. And so the middle's like, wow, he's really going to town.
It's bigging up that weight. So it's all nighters. Mm-hmm.
Yes. Yeah. Unit confirmed. they just end up doing really strange things. Like we had some like complications at the end of the pregnancy because they were like, we don't know how big the child is. And then when he came out, it was like, oh, he's really long. He's really long and he was curled up. And so it turned out he was like literally a fine weight. It was totally fine. He was putting on weight. We didn't even need to stress out about it, whatever. But then like the first few months, same. He put on some weight, but he just like shot up and he's like, I think he's now 18 months. He's only something like 10 or 15 centimeters longer than he was at 6 months. He was in the 99th percentile, I think, for weight and height at that point. And then you're like, oh no, this is a bit much. Like this is not on a normal chart. And now he's just like 50th percentile or whatever. Just like a completely normal chunker. But he was just like, yeah.
How big was he when he actually came out?
Like weight-wise?
Weight-wise, yeah.
How many stone?
Just, yeah, I was trying to do the math. I want to say like 3.1 kilos, something around that range. So like lighter than normal, lighter than what you maybe expect. But he was like, yeah, 99th percentile for length or something like that. 95th percentile for length.
That's wild.
Yeah, they were like, oh, yeah, this is why we couldn't get a good measurement. And this is why we couldn't see it properly on the sonar guy thing.
It's funny, like we had the same thing. Like they thought one of our kids was like massive and it was totally normal. It was like 7 pounds or 7.5 or something like that. It was something like that. I don't know how they try to determine what that weight is, but it doesn't really work.
They just try and they basically try and measure some core parts of the body and then they infer from a model. Like,
right.
A mate of mine that I was hanging out with today is a pediatrician. And like when we were having the problems about them being like, oh, we don't know how big he is, blah, 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 blah. He was just like, this is all bullshit, by the way. Like they're going to try a whole bunch of stuff.
Yeah.
They're going to come up with a weight and they're either going to like then do some more medical shit or not based on that. Like, and they will be wrong. He's like, they will 100% be wrong. Like, I guarantee you, like they don't know. They're just trying their best, but they will be wrong. And then like it all got like super complicated. Cool turned out fine. Turned out to be a totally normal size. And like he was just like, told you.
It's fine.
I was like, helpful. That's really helpful energy right now. I am very sleep deprived. It's like, yeah, but like he came over, hold the little guy. He's like, this baby is fine. I told you the baby would be fine. I'm like, I know. I thought it would be fine too. And he's like, just, you know, whatever. And it's like, well, it's good that you know what's going on, but you know, it would also be weird if you were my doctor. Oh, doctor, my doctor. Anyway. So do we want to talk about some of the goings on in the cosmos?
Do we have to?
I feel like once again our news researcher has been vigilanteing the creation of news. So you know, that in itself is, you know, in a very limited sense, usurper. I would say that Game of Nodes is sponsoring investigative journalism. That in a limited sense.
I we're definitely contributing.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Now,
so
nobody's here to argue that point. So I think that we can state that we are financially contributing to strong investigative reporting.
Yeah,
that's a true statement.
Yeah,
right. I mean, you can't deny that. Like it's on the blockchain.
It's literally on the. To be fair, it is quite literally on the.
It's
blockchain.
On the blockchain. Yeah, exactly. We'll take it.
God damn.
Where do you want to start?
Yeah, this where do you want to start with this? Seriously. It's absolutely insane. So Coogee, you know what? The place to start is a tweet by the agent at Agent Neutron on Twitter, stating $Coogee getting murdered. I think that's the entry point to this conversation. So Kajira is dead. And who killed it? The Foundation killed it. And why was it killed? It was killed, drum roll, because they were messing around with the hot wallet, right? Specifically, now this is the bit where you might have to correct me. The they were leveraged in order to back up other liquidity positions.
Yeah,
and they started getting called, I think.
Well, I think there was manipulation of those markets to make those start to fail.
Right, right. Okay. Yeah. Oh, so it was specifically market manipulation then?
It was, yeah. I think it was someone, some group that was specifically targeting these wallets that that were going against, that they were specifically targeting these wallets that held these positions to try to destabilize that token, yes.
Right. So... yeah, I mean it's kind of interesting, isn't it?
I think it's always funny that it's always funny when the idea of the DAO comes around is always like
what's the song I'm thinking of? When the man comes around.
Yeah, like
when like the DAO comes around.
The party's over, it's all gone. They're just sweeping up shit all over the floor and they go, "Yeah, we should create a DAO." With the initial mandate to safely reduce debt. Like this is like they're forward thinking. Like, hey, I got a great idea. What we should do? We can't take away the 124 million that we lost, but we should totally take it out of our hands because we clearly know what the fuck we're doing. We should do it in a way to DAO.
Also, very crucially, let's take the responsibility out of our hands so we can quietly smoke bomb and rug pull away.
Yeah.
Or into the night.
We can like
genuinely, they'll just be like, I mean, fuck it. Could be wrong. But it does also feel like, you know, what are they going to do to come back from this? Are they going to hang around and be like, right, yeah, cool. Let's keep on building.
Well, I mean, AADAO was supposedly in the mix to be able to. I don't think bailout's the right word, but be able to basically be able to provide some liquidity to bring this back. And then now it's all about, was it Tron that's stepping up or something like that? Although I haven't heard anything related to that. Maybe somebody in the comments knows what's going on with that. I heard that was being thrown around. I retweeted the tweet because the AADAO comment was like, the AADAO comment. AADAO was like, hey, we would like to do this, but we looked at it and like it's way too risky. Like it was really well worded and it was a very Thor chain. Sorry, Robin. What did I say? Anyway.
You said Tron.
Yeah, I
didn't correct you because I was like, wait, yeah. I thought it was the one with Thor the rainbow.
Chain. Yeah.
Not the one with the shit coin. Yeah. And then I was like, I can't say that out loud and I'm too tired to actually remember the name of the chain.
Yeah. Not fucking Tron. Thor chain. Sorry. And from what Funky just said, that was scratched. Apparently, they offered hardly anything. Well, hardly anything might be a pretty good deal here coming up. But I think the Atom Accelerator looked at it and they had a very nice set of tweets that basically said, "Hey, it's not for us." So, which there was a lot of comments on both sides of that they should have taken it over. And another said, you know, there needs to be a use case. This is it's a great platform. Why don't you take it over? Another one's said, you know, this seems like it's a mess and, you know, good job in staying away from it. So there's comments on both sides of that. But I'm guessing what they saw wasn't great and probably.
Yeah, apparently.
The word risk came up a couple of times.
So this was this an event at least partly caused by. No, so this was a few days ago, wasn't it? So it wasn't actually part of the current market instability that we've literally seen this week. This was separate market instability of 1 week ago.
Yeah. You know, it was like a few days after the Terra thing. Nothing to do with it. Totally separate.
Mm.
Yeah. Yeah. Cool stuff.
That's
which
mad,
is too bad. Like the Couture team, like it's a good team and it was a good product. And like this type of stuff, like I don't really understand how these things were, how these positions that were wiped and like, and how Kuji backs up some of those types of pieces. But I think that when found, this has happened a few times, right?
Yeah.
I don't know if a DAO is the right answer here. And like, I don't think, no, that is, but there, this is a,
well, not a DAO in its current state of maturity, right? Because to manage $35 million, you need a plan.
No, it was a hundred and no, it was more than that, dude. It was like a hundred and fucking something.
Well, it was 124 million at peak, right?
It's about
35 million as of this week, possibly less actually.
Yeah,
is my understanding.
Yeah. So, I mean, of even a make believe token that they own, once there is that level of financial ownership, this level of control is fucking garbage. And it doesn't just affect them. It's affected a ton of people that had positions and lost a ton, even with the stable structure associated, right? So is this negligent? I mean, that's really,
I mean, there's a whole, and we've been saying, well, we've been talking about it on the podcast for literally years now, actually, about how centralized team structures are really, like you say, in that situation, like a real, real problem. And actually, like, you know, building the hard thing in terms of like trying to figure out the tech of your organizational structure, but also trying to figure out the tech of like things that you have to do up front, like privacy and whatnot, are pretty important from getting around. There's a reason that regulators don't like private tokens. It's because they can't prove negligence either.
Yeah.
So right. Like, you know, you have some additional operational autonomy potentially if you do that. But additionally, like, you know, the real smoking gun here, like, is not solved by privacy or additional technological whizbangery. It's that operationally,
this is oversight.
Operationally, they didn't have the right oversight structure for handling $124 million. Like, that's a lot of money, and any other organization would have thought about that. And I get it. I get it. We're building the airplane on the way down.
Yeah.
That is the space we're in. But, you know, it's not hard to see that this would be the case. Just like, you know, we're now veterans of a bunch of these problems throughout the cosmos. And it's like, it's also like no surprise that, you know, the thing we always said about Juno, even when Juno was still going up in price or whatever, where you go like, oh, you know, there's some different personalities on that team or whatever. It's not hard to see, in the same way that like a startup with the wrong founders is going to hit a brick wall.
Yeah.
Like when you scale a startup, you end up with all sorts of organizational problems that you didn't have before. And most startups aren't dealing. They don't have as nice to have a problem as $124 million worth of assets to worry about. And that they usually, you know, they've got like a few hundred grand of investor money and a bunch of staff, and they're shitting the bed about their organizational dynamics, just managing that. So, yeah. I mean, this shit's hard, you know?
It is. And these types of situations like this, like, it seems like they're a little bit over the ski tips, and some group recognized it, took action. Yeah. And it kind of reminds me of Terra One, to be honest, like the similar type structure where you found a way to be able to, what's the good analogy? Glass mold, break the ice sculpture, whatever the fuck it is. Speaking of Terra. Yeah. So unlike a failure of governance, this looks like just a failure of Git merge. So anyway, so Terra had a patch. There was a known defect, bug, whatever, in IBC, in the IBC hooks module. This was back in April of this year. I remember a whole bunch of fucking emergency upgrades associated to this. The way I understand it is that Terra did patch this back in April, and somehow that patch did not make it through to the next version of Terra that was pushed out.
So it was a cock up with the IBC hooks version. Oh, so Funky said in the in the chat. It's, I think it's related to the IBC version that had patches in that was rolled out across the Cosmos a little while ago. And they had they'd unpatched somehow. This is the bit I don't understand. So yeah, Funky's saying in the chat, they roll the chain state back or something. So if the change was state breaking, then they would have had to completely roll back the change, including the protocol, like the compatibility layer, and also rewrite any affected data. So I don't think it was that. I think it must have been just a pure code side dependency issue. But yeah, it was rolled back.
Rama says there's never proof in GitHub that they had patched it. Oh, that's what I heard, but that might be, that's sweet. That's even better. Fucking perfect. Fuck it.
Well, so I think what probably happened was a lot of teams patched this privately in private GitHub forks of their own mainline repos because they didn't want to share the code. And because obviously a lot of developers in Cosmos only know how to go mod tidy, what happens when you have two versions of the same repository is you need to set multiple upstreams in order to make sure your work is synced across the private version of your repository and the public version.
Right.
And so, you know, once you've changed the one line of code that has the hooks changes and you've run go mod tidy, you then need to do git push upstream origin private repository. And then when you're ready to bring those changes in your mainline repository for the whole world to see, because you're going to build a new version of the software and the patch is out and it's publicly known about, you then need to do git push origin main or whatever your working branch is in order to then continue to develop with the same changes that you've already persisted to your private repository. You know, it's a lot of work to type those like four or five extra words. I guess to be fair, you could actually use the dash U flag to actually take out one word when you originally pushed to that branch. But it is a lot of effort to type four words. So it's very understandable that the developer would not pull those changes into the public repository and then come a cropper later.
Who knows? Could have been termed, could have not been there anymore. I don't know the whole situation, but like I totally agree. You clone the repo, you build a separate binary that has a patch in it. Next thing you know, that's gone. But you would think, like, wouldn't they have, like, is there any testing in this shit? Isn't there any, like, don't you have, isn't there a requirement structure for specific modules at specific versions that you'd say, hey, these are minimums that have to be in terms of a build requirement?
No, because each build is like because we build binary, we build and ship binaries, don't we, in Cosmos. So each one is an artifact in of itself. And as long as the artifact is state compatible with the current state of the chain, there's not really a good way of telling. You have to assume that once it's created. So yes, if you have a chain of history that includes all of the correct Git history, and in which case it wouldn't happen because the change would be in the file, right? Like the file is this, but what happened was they just didn't include that file or it wasn't there. And if Rama says, you know, there's no record in GitHub, that's the smoking gun.
I mean, clearly, yes. I mean, yeah.
You know, that wasn't checked.
I do remember that. I do remember that emergency patch. I do remember binaries being created, right? Which is typical, right? You would not
have it happened, a repo to pull from. It happened on Stargaze as well. There was a private repository that that was shared. And then once 33.4% of voting power had patched, then they made it public, right? So we for example, just patched with the public version, I think, possibly, or shipped a binary. It's a bit of a faff to get access to private repositories all the time for these sorts of things. But, you know, that's the accepted and sensible way of doing these things, right?
It's good that we have massive losses on both the business process side and the technology process side. It's good to have that balance, right?
Yeah, yeah. It's like, really, really good.
It's really a failure. You can't be technology teams disappointing at like finance or business teams or going the other way. Like, it's really you both. Everybody's fucked up.
On a related note, I am about to start conducting validator questionnaires having got my ethics approval and everything.
So
on one of the questions we will be asking is about communications for validator operations, you know, on a scale of on a Likert scale of never, sometimes, occasionally, very occasionally, whatever. How often do you check the code in a given upgrade before you run it? On average, how many individual people do you have contact with in a foundation or centralized ops team or developer team that ships code? You know, these sorts of questions. And I think the answer is, in a lot of cases, going to be, we have regular contact with one person in Telegram.
We don't know their name.
Do not check. Yeah, exactly. They're a whale emoji. And we don't check the code.
I don't even know if they work there.
Sometimes check the code before I run it. And every time somebody says sometimes, you could downgrade that to a never, let's be honest. So coming soon for validators that happen to validate Cosmos Network that we are also doing. During the month of August, one of the most exciting things that you could possibly take part in would be fill out a 30 question multiple choice piece of research for my computer science research.
Are we in that or no? We know each other, right? Are we excluded?
You can fill out the questionnaire. That shit's anonymous. We'll actually be doing some audio interviews as well. Those are trickier because I'm going to have to try and find participants that I don't have any real connection.
I can help with that.
Hey,
does it have to be valid? It has to be validators, right?
Validators. Yeah. Validators that I don't have a personal relationship with.
Because I know a bunch that do validation. It doesn't have to be Cosmos, does it?
Ideally, Cosmos, I think, because we're talking about specific. This is the thing. I think I probably would be relatively interested to talk to people outside the Cosmos as well, actually. But that's another story. Like the stuff I'm going to include in the current paper that I'm writing is just Cosmos. But I don't think including validators from other ecosystems, at least in terms of audio interviews, is going to meaningfully change the character or risk structure of this investigation. And so I probably won't have to seek further approval to do it. So I'll probably do it. I had thought about, to be honest, like potentially trying to recruit some Aptos validators because I was kind of curious as to like the different structure, like for the audio interviews this is, because number one, I don't really know any of them. So there's less of a conflict of interest. And also I think there's some bigger teams there. And I think if you just get people who work for a bigger organization, even if they're an authorized person who authorized to talk on a subject, I don't think if you give them a questionnaire, they're just going to tick all the boxes that make them sound great. Whereas I think if you talk to them in a straightforward way, in an audio interview, it's much like if you interview a like semi-famous band or something, if you just did it over email, they'd just be like, it's great. New record's great. We're amazing. Tour's amazing. All the support bands are amazing. Lovely stuff. And if you talk to them about it, you know, you go like, it sounds like there was some tension between you guys and your recording engineer. And they'd be like, well, we did change engineers halfway through the recording of this album. And you're like, whoa, okay. You know, it's like one of those classic, like, if you can react to what people are saying, you can usually get much more interesting stuff out of a discussion, right?
When you said that, like, sometimes, always, this, that, you know, I'll put a link to the show. I was thinking about Keith's appraisal in the UK version of The Office. Do you remember that episode? Do you watch the show with David Prent and like?
It's too cringe. It's
so goddamn cringe. Anyway,
yeah, that's it's the style. You know, like that style of comedy, like Peep Show. Have you ever seen Peep Show?
No.
Peep Show is more of like a British thing. It's like David Mitchell.
Okay,
and it's genius, but it's so cringe. Like it's where what's his name? The Kajira dev, super, what's his face? Super.
What hands?
Code hands. Code hands is a reference to a character in.
Oh, right, Peep right. Called super right, we hands. Talked about that. Yeah. Super hands.
Peep Show is super, super, super cringe. And I think I like it's one of those that's always on when you go to certain people's houses. They're just like binge watching it. And like, I can dip in
for a few minutes.
And I'm like, oh, this is too much. It's just like, it makes me feel physically awkward. There's just so many bits that just, oh.
They're, like, you can't sit there and watch them. Like, you have to squirm. Like, they're really awkward.
I reckon, so there's a lot of energy in the chat. There's a lot of energy in the chat for Super Hands. And I would say, actually, Super Hands is one of the characters that makes Peep Show bearable, because he is just pure comic relief. And all of his lines about, yeah, crack, with the bit where they're in a band together and all that stuff, it's just, oh, it's very funny. There's some good super cuts of Super Hands on YouTube as well.
And then you take one of the boxes. Not at all, to some extent, very much so. Don't know. What would you take? Don't know. Okay, question two. Under weaknesses, you just wrote eczema. Do you feel you've received adequate training to use your computer effectively? What are the options? Same as before. They're always the same. Not at all. To some extent, very much. Don't know again. Okay. That's what you should do. You should do. Do you feel you know the people who are actually building the binaries that you see when emergency object? One of my options. Not at all. To some extent, very much so. Don't know. Those are the four you should use. See if anybody actually picks it up.
Yeah, do you, I mean, do you know? I do have to actually do some academic research. Do you know, but like, I'll take that.
Do you know anybody's real name? What are my options again?
Yeah,
not at all. To some extent, very much so. Don't know.
To be fair, the only bit of the ecosystem that is actually genuinely low trust is the fact that everybody's just emojis. But apart from that. The system requires intense centralized coordination in order to function. It's yeah.
What would be interesting? I know it's not part of what you're doing, but if you're curious, it would be interesting to do a set of Cosmos vowels, like not the ones you know, like maybe like other ones that we don't work with too close. Like PFC was a really good example of that, or maybe like Beware or some other whatever. Like just some other ones. It'd be good to do some Aptos vowels that we don't work that. Obviously you don't have a lot of crossover, and it'd be good to do some Ethereum validators. Like, was we know a lot of those like larger, yeah, like crypto manufacturer and like those types of things, like, and ones that run nodes across Ethereum L1, L2s, and also like emerging large scale, I don't know what you call Aptos, but whatever. And that, and see what those differences are. Cause it probably doesn't fit
big,
your
big
model,
expensive but venture capital networks. Well, it's true. Like, you know,
which is my favorite type of network.
It's certainly a network that keep. It's certainly a type of network that keeps the lights on, as far as I can tell. But yeah, you know what? I might actually hit you up specifically because I know you have some contacts like that. Without the for the audio interview side, which I know.
Yeah, for sure. Which like which folks you don't know. Yeah, for sure.
I mean, and hey, it means that I can, what's it called when I have to declare what's it called? Ethical compromise and an advice to the reader or whatever it's called. I'll have to put, oh, and by the way, a lot of these are one step of remove because of other validators in the well-established validator cartel that all validators are in.
Your other one is, I'm also a degen and run a validator.
It's not a cartel, but it is formally in a similar structure to a cartel. And in order to establish whether or not it was in fact a cartel, I had to reach out to other members of the cartel to put me in touch with different cartels, different cells, if you like, in our terrorist network of cartels that that run all the validators in every ecosystem. And as it turns out, you know, 6 degrees of separation is bullshit when you can have 1 degree of separation. And that's the entire of the crypto sphere. Is just
do you test your binaries? What are the options again? Not at all. To some extent, it's very much the same. Very much so. Don't know. If don't know wasn't there, what would you say? What are the options? Not at all. To some extent, very much so. Don't know. Do you test your binaries? Very much so. Do you remember the question? No.
I'm sorry. We got to wait for the limo. That's what chain are you guys validating right now? We're playing we're validating the Cosmos chains. Oh yeah, we're just validating the VC and Ormo chain.
We're at the Ormo Dome. Yeah,
you know how these things are. You know, it's big there. You sell it. You sell it out. Yeah, we sell our tokens every month. We sell our tickets, everybody. You could rewrite a lot of Spinal Tap into a Cosmos bit. Like, in some ways, the cricket bat is an affectation, but in the topsy-turvy world of crypto validation, sometimes there's no substitute for having a solid piece of wood in your hands.